Hey, Em.
Hey, Tare.
Can I share with you a little practice that this chapter, How Dorothy Saved the Scarecrow, inspired in my life?
For sure.
Okay. So I was thinking, like, I'm starting to walk and get out of the apartment more because I'm realizing I'm suffocating in here if I stay in here all day. Yeah. So I'm trying to get out more. I'm trying to work out in the park. And I, like, always feel the inclination to, like, make my walk be like active in terms of like, I need to have a podcast and I should call someone on this walk. Like I feel that to-do energy coming in, but I've recently adapted a practice I'm calling my Dorothy walk because Dorothy has nothing on her walk. So she just goes for it with her own thoughts and Toto.
I love that.
By her side. So I'm like, let me just be Dorothy and be present to my scenery.
That's beautiful, Dare.
Have you been Dorothy walking at all?
Now I'm gonna. I need a dog.
I know.
Yes, I
need to work on that.
Yeah, we need to convince your husband.
Or a cat. I'm open.
Yeah. No, I love that idea because you're right. She just is kind of like taking in her scenery, enjoying life. And I think I need to do that more, especially when I'm on a screen a lot of the day. Dorothy didn't have her screens.
No.
I love that, Tara.
Well, I am Tara.
I'm MK.
And you're listening to Down the Yellow Brick Pod. Woo!
Welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us today for Chapter 3, How Dorothy Saved the Scarecrow.
Yes.
So as per usual, we are going to go through our quick, we try to make them quick. We like words. They are not quick. Three bullet points of what happens in this chapter. So here we go. Here are my bullet points, aka run-on sentences. Left to her own devices after being given a brief history of the Land of Oz, Dorothy prepares for her journey to the Emerald City with some lunch and transforms into her now iconic look with her blue gingham dress and silver shoes. Number two, along her journey on the Yellow Brick Road through Munchkin Land, Dorothy stumbles upon a group of Munchkins celebrating their freedom from the Wicked Witch's bondage, and meets a wealthy munchkin named Bok, who believes she must be a sorceress because she wears white. We'll get into that. Bullet point number three. The next day, taking a rest on a fence, Dorothy notices a scarecrow in a field who winks at her and reveals he can talk, leading Dorothy to invite him to join on her journey to the Emerald City to see if the Wizard of Oz can give him some brains. Now you don't even need to read the chapter. That was long.
That was so illustrious. Okay, mine are like to the point.
Amazing.
Do you want to hear them?
I would love to.
Okay. So just in case you just had scarecrow amnesia in this moment and just forgot everything MK said, here's another version. Left on her own, Dorothy packs for her indefinite journey, emptying goods from her pantry into a basket. And costume changes into her clean but faded gingham dress and her red cap and the silver shoes that happen to fit perfectly. Mm. Bullet point number two. Dorothy and Toto discover the Yellow Brick Road, which takes them through the abundant farmland of the East all day, and they end up passing the night with bougie munchkin and party animal Bok and his family, who welcome them into their celebration of freedom. Woo. Dorothy and Toto set back off down the Yellow Brick Road, where they meet the Scarecrow, whom Dorothy indeed saves and invites upon her journey so he can seek what he is missing, a brain.
Ugh, crushed it.
Woo! Okay,
crushed it.
Tell me what you noticed about the W.W. Denslow imagery.
Well, this is a party. On the very first page of this chapter, there are four munchkins. Technically five, playing the fiddle, they're dancing, and Dorothy has this great expression on her face, just like, oh, of shock and surprise, and just really never seeing this before. I love it.
Amazing. Is there any words you want to use to describe these images, which kind of take us through the whole party, which we'll get into her beginning on the walk, mm-hmm. and then her meeting of the scarecrow. What are your top three words to describe these?
Ooh, okay. Jolly. Shocked.
Yes.
Dorothy and Toto's eyes are very, very large with shock. Liberated.
Yes. I put M on the spot always for these. So it's like flipping through the pages, finding these words. I love that. I said jubilance too. Yeah. Like such like just unabashed freedom and fun and celebration. Mm-hmm. Also, I love this little image of this munchkin who is bowing. Mm-hmm. That gets said in the chapter that she's walking and munchkins are just kind of peering out of their house and some of them are like honoring her. So I wrote honoring.
I love that.
There's all this like energy being directed towards Dorothy. Mm-hmm. And then for the scarecrow, I said flimsy.
Yes.
He's so like delicate looking and like floppy and like he's taking his first steps. He's so adorable.
He's going to fall apart at any moment.
I also have to share what I love the most about these pictures. Mm-hmm. And it comes from the main image, like the main drawing of this chapter, which is plate two. It's Dorothy being celebrated and honored by all the munchkins at Box House at the party. Hats are coming off to her. I'm obsessed with the moon.
The moon
is smiling.
It's smiling, y'all.
What do you think I'm also obsessed with?
Dorothy has a flower crown! Y'all, Tara loves flower crowns.
This is me at my wedding.
That's her at her wedding, literally. It's perfect.
It's very basic of me, but I love flower crowns. Actually, the history of flower crowns is so amazing. Like the whole renewal of spring, feeling spring in your body, fresh start. And mm-hmm. Dorothy's getting a fresh start.
I never noticed that.
Right? She has a flower crown and it doesn't go with her. It's only on her head in this moment. I never noticed that. Toto also just looking like, what the?
He wanted a flower crown.
I know. They should have given one to Toto. They're very also, though, like, they're like, what is Toto? They don't know what to do with Toto.
They had never seen a dog. That was a fun little realization I made.
Okay, let's get into this chapter. So let's talk about, like, where Dorothy's left off. So the last moment of chapter two leaves Dorothy, like, unfazed by the Good Witch of the North just, like, disappearing into thin air mm-hmm. and Toto barking. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even flinch at that. And now she is on her own.
She's on her own.
She's on her own for the first-ish time in this new bizarre land.
Yeah.
So, what in these moments of her, like, packing up and getting ready to go on this journey struck you?
Well, first things first, we've talked about this before. In the very first sentence, when Dorothy was left alone, she began to feel hungry.
Hashtag.
She's hangry. She just survived a tornado and no one's given her food. I feel like in a lot of works of literature, especially for kids, they don't really talk about characters being hungry.
Like, the human traits are not discussed. They're just assumed that they're happening.
Yeah.
It makes me think of The Bachelor. This is terrible.
Oh, shout out Bachelor.
Bachelor! All my basicness is coming out. It makes me think of, like, how they don't really eat on the show.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. They just have plates of food that we don't know is real.
They don't touch because they're not human.
Right. They are robots.
Continue on. Get away from The Bachelor.
That's a whole other rabbit hole for another day. Yeah. So I love that L. Frank Baum details her journey to actually find food on her own. I also love the idea that she does even go back to the house and kind of takes a second to gather herself and say, mm-hmm. what am I going to do? Whereas in the movie, it's just like, they sent her on her way. She goes. I kind of like that she has this moment to herself.
It's very ritualistic in a way. Like, there's, like, a hero prepares. Mm-hmm. There's something really beautiful about witnessing her take a moment.
Yes. And then I do love the idea of, exactly what you're saying. I can picture it in my head of her seeing her blue blue and white gingham dress hanging, and she decides to put that on. She puts on her bonnet. She puts on the silver shoes, and as you mentioned, they magically fit. There is such a, yeah, transformation that happens there that is just so cool to envision.
Mm. Also because she probably has, like, vomit on her other dress from when the... the house crashed. She probably vomited on it just like a little bit.
Just a bit. Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably also drenched in sweat. Like, she needed to change.
Come on, girl. I love that. So that's what stuck out to me in those first few moments. How about you?
I am with you. What has struck out to me first, the save the scarecrow, like that kind of like reverse rescue that we don't often, well, we're starting to see more of, but at the time, like, a little girl saving a masculine character.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah, more rare.
Also, Dorothy's self-care. Like, she instantly goes into a place of, like, what do I need to take care of myself to go on this journey? She finds the little sparkling brook. She makes herself, like, some toast. She takes a moment. Like, she's not rushing this nourishment part that, like you said, is not really shown. Like, it's given a nice spotlight in this. So just witnessing her take that moment, take off this dress, put on the gingham dress.
The gingham dress.
Feels like it should have, like, a song. Like, something should be like, oh!
That's when it comes out.
And the shoes are on the table. And I love, we'll get into the gingham dress in a second, but I love, like, Toto's presence allows her to speak things out loud, like some affirmations too, or like she puts things out of her head into the air. She's like, oh, these shoes are going to hurt. Basically, she says about her shoes because they're a little bit, I think she says they're worn.
Yeah.
And then by saying that out loud, Toto, like, barks or agrees with her, and then she notices the silver slippers, which she, like, you know, she got a lot of information from the Good Witch of the North. She probably forgot about it.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I would have forgotten. And then it's like, oh yeah, the silver slippers.
Oh, yeah.
So she has that moment. I love, like, her Toto affirmations. I think they're so cute.
He's and the best.
She sees the shoes, and then the gingham dress. I didn't realize until we started doing this reread and how, like, Dorothy steps into becoming this, like, walking Americana.
Mm-hmm.
She puts on the red cap, too. Like, yes, we don't have the ruby red slippers, but the shoes are silver.
Mm-hmm.
The dress is blue and white. So she's, like, bringing America into this uncharted magical land, which is so interesting.
Yeah.
And just also, like, this becoming a woman feeling, like, the silver slippers going on her feet. There's a little heel in them.
Yeah.
Like, has she ever worn heels before? Like, what is she feeling?
She's probably so excited.
And it makes me, like, think of, like, don't sleep on little girls. Like, I think we, like, you know, with kids, sometimes we can, like, oh, they don't really know. We can, like, you know, put them in that. But I'm like, don't sleep. Like, she's got this.
She's got this.
She could save this whole country. She could save herself. She could save others. And I think that's, I don't know, there's something so empowering, like, with the shoes, putting on those shoes and seeing herself maybe as not, and she says her dress is faded, but, like, a little bit brighter too, like stepping into this brighter thing. So that really, the imagery that came with that really stood out. And my last thing I never noticed or thought about is the key.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I know.
She takes her key and locks the door to her house, so, like, no munchkins gonna get in there.
No munchkins are gonna get in there.
If they wanted to make, like, a museum out of that house, forget it. They're
locked.
Gonna have to break in.
Isn't that great?
She takes the key, locks it. Like, there's, you see, like, she's been, like, she's very well behaved. She knows how to take care. She's very responsible. She locks the door and she puts it in her pocket. That key is in her pocket. And I don't know if it gets mentioned again.
I don't think so.
But that means her power to go home has always been within her.
Ah!
Right?
I love that detail.
Her key is there, but we forget about it. We forget she has the key.
She has the key. Oh, that's a symbol right there. There we go. Yeah, Jack Zipes in my copy in the notes mentions that, and I got chills when I read it. He basically said, yeah, he points out her responsibility, having the foresight to still think, even though she's in this fantastical land. Oh, I should probably lock the door. I love that. But that, he says, she really has no need to lock it. I mean, what's really going to happen? And then the thing that he said that brought me chills was, for all we know, the house is still standing in Munchkinland today.
Locked.
Ah! And that, I just had a million creative ideas like pop into my head of discovering upon this house in Munchkinland. And, oh, that's Dorothy, the one who killed the witch. It's just,
there's got to be a monument. Like,
yeah.
There
yeah.
has to be something. Like, maybe it's very untouched.
Yeah.
But I love, too, like, the attention to how meticulous she is in her, like, little prep. Like, she's very, it's like how you handle your books. Like, it's very precise and, like, almost, I don't know, there's something so calming and comforting in how she just puts her, like, her movement into, like, this journey into action really quick.
Yeah.
But takes care of herself and takes care of her home first.
Still has time to make lunch.
All right. So should we should we get to the Yellow Brick Road?
Well, before we do that, I kind of got nerdy. And
tell
I
me more.
Dove real, real deep into the history of Gingham.
No, I did too. I forgot about it.
Should we talk about Gingham?
Yes. Tell me more.
Okay. So there's this really great article online called V is for Vintage. Or maybe it's a publication and then this is an article on the history of Gingham. But I was so intrigued by, obviously, Gingham. When we see it, we do naturally think of Dorothy. And it also has this very patriotic Americana feel. But in my research, which feels timely, is, this is a quote from the article. The United States claims that Gingham could not be more American, having produced the fabric for a couple of centuries. However, Gingham was imported to colonial USA long before it was locally produced. So I just thought that was interesting.
America, there we are, just...
that Gingham is, it is very patriotic. It is, it has always been such a very popular, durable, easy to make clothes and home decor out of, that it is in our aesthetic as Americans, but it was initially manufactured in Dutch colonized Malaysia and Indonesia and India. Then it was exported to Europe in the 17th century, and it was later imported to the USA. And then Americans started manufacturing it locally in the 18th century. So, and I also thought it was cool, the word gingham derives from the Malaysian word genggang, G-E-N-G-G-A-N-G, meaning striped, which was adopted by the Dutch. In Indonesia, gingham, the blue and white symbolizes the battle between good and evil. So there's a lot of, like, other cultures infused into gingham and even into the most common colors in gingham, blue and white. So that just kind of set my imagination a spark.
MK! Oh my gosh. Well, A, I have to say first, Em and I are in a book club together where we're reading this book by Layla F. Said called Me and White Supremacy. And our theme that came from this week is, like, knowing and honoring the source, like, where things come from, because there's a lot of that. That is a very blurred education. That is incredible. I had chills when you were speaking, but yes, so American, stolen a little bit, but also multicultural in its actual representation.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Which is the magical part about being an American, but also the stain part of being an American of, like, where does that, why does that honoring get lost? I mean, you went for it. That was not my research. Like, I am so, like, inspired and proud by you. I was like, oh, I wrote down that, the dress from the movie was, like, $1 million. It was it went for $1 million, and her sweat is still present on the dress.
Nerdy. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's also, so cool.
I don't want to get too into it. We'll get into the movie in another season, but she had so much, like, Judy Garland had on a corset, all this stuff restricting her body. So the amount of sweat and, like, labor that that dress had to witness.
Wow. That's a lot.
I know. But the dress is considered, like, a timeless, iconic, classic Hollywood, like, sake we have to preserve, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. And going off of what you said earlier, the original dress was designed by costume designer Adrian. He just went by Adrian. How cool is that? Yes. I love that for the 1939 movie. And even just the visual of the movie, as well as the novel, of seeing, as you mentioned, like a literal American flag, the colors of the flag, it represents the symbol of home, traveling with Dorothy in this land of Oz. So yes. You never lose sight of that visual of home, of down home Kansas, kind of a more rural fabric traveling with her.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that, like, I was reading too, like, gingham was cheap at the time. It was definitely like the definition of ordinary, what a lot of children were wearing at that time. Yeah. Also with the shoes, like just magically fitting her.
Yeah, what's up with that? What do you think?
I also was thinking of like the first parallel I recognized was Aladdin with the, like, the genie lamp. Like, when that is in your hands, it is yours.
Yes.
So I feel like I wonder, like, or like the wands from Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. Like, does the shoes choose you or do you choose the shoes? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Right. I had a question, too. From my reading, it was interesting that the Witch of the North was kind of like, those are her shoes. They have a power. We don't really know what it is, but they're yours now.
Yes.
And I'm wondering...
It's a little irresponsible.
Yeah, she's just like, here you go. And then later on, Bach, which we'll get into, the wealthy munchkin, says, you're wearing the silver shoes. And I'm wondering...
And it's not the silver shoes.
Right, you're wearing silver shoes.
So it's like, oh.
Are there other pairs? Are there other pairs? That was... I never thought of that. Are there multiple pairs of these shoes? Do many witches have them? Like, what is that?
Shoes. We're going to have to get into the shoes. I mean, we'll have a whole shoe.
Yeah.
Roundabout.
We need a whole podcast on shoes.
My gosh. Amazing. All right. Now the Yellow Brick Road. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you one of the first things I never noticed?
Yes.
Was the fact that it took her a second to find the road. Like, there were other roads.
Yeah.
And all she knew was that, like, I have a color that I'm supposed to be following. Mm-hmm. And so, great. The first crossroads is clear because I just know that I'm looking for this color, mm-hmm. which is so interesting. Like, when we're at crossroads in life, like, what is the one thing that is going to pull you down the road?
Yeah.
So she was able to trust that.
Yeah.
Also got, like, just a little bit nerdy with, like, what yellow represents.
Yes.
In the light side of yellow, it could represent freshness, clarity, loyalty, energy, got that sunshine in it, joy, enlightenment. But my favorite thing ever, too, that it represents on, like, maybe the shadier side is caution.
Yes.
Caution. So, like, that proceed with caution, energy is always there, but there's also this joyous boom from it. It's so fascinating. So it has both of those energies, I think, happening at the same time. Which is so cool. But I never noticed that it took her a second to figure out where the road was.
Right.
Because, you know, in the movie, it's literally she looks down.
There it is. Yeah. You're right.
So that was an interesting, that caught me off guard right away. What was speaking to you in this journey before she hits Bach's place?
I love all that, Tara. Yeah. That was my first time noticing that as well. Well, I just love Toto. I gotta shout him out. Like, he gets these tiny little lines. I just love the line... And so, with Toto trotting along soberly behind her, she started on her journey. I just love, why is he, he's just soberly like, where are we going? What's going on? Very confused. And yeah, I also, in the next paragraph, Baum is describing her journey and he says, Dorothy did not feel nearly as bad as you might think a little girl Wood, who had been suddenly whisked away from her own country set down in the midst of a strange land. I just love that. As we've been saying, Dorothy has this very calm, kind of chill demeanor on the outside because we're not really delving too deep into her psyche on this journey. So it is interesting and simplistic, and I kind of love it.
She's feeling herself. I really think those shoes are like making her feel powerful. She's walking into this new land. There's something that struck me in that, like, I love that you brought that up of how she's surprisingly okay.
Yeah.
This line that says, evidently the Munchkins were good farmers and able to raise large crops, which is something she noticed just from walking through.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was a strange realization. I wonder if, like, Uncle Henry has been struggling or there's, like, some... like awareness around that, like her farm feels gray, right? Or feels like a little bit more dried up. Maybe they're experiencing some harsher weather and whatever. back in Kansas, and she's seeing all this lush crop. Yeah. So I wonder, like, just taking that in too, like, if she was having some comparison of back home and like, wow, is this better than back home? Mm-hmm. Like, starting to ask that question, or like, do I like this more? Do I feel different here? Like, what was going on in her brain? And also just like, he describes the homes like with these like human characteristics. When you look at this image here, I didn't even bring up this image.
Yeah.
The home, it looks like it has a face.
Yeah.
Which that had to be really interesting for Dorothy to see. Yes. Like these blue homes. We'll also have to get into that. The blue.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
The color of the East.
Yes. With like the doors looking like mouths.
Yeah. Interesting.
Isn't that funny? Very, it feels like you're going, like, I instantly imagine, like, myself as a little girl at this place that was down in South Jersey called Storybrooke Land.
Oh!
And they had stuff like that. Yes. Like, little huts that were, like, very magical.
Yeah.
So, that had to be super fun for her. But tell me about, like, your response to the blue landscape. Because she starts to mention, like, oh, wow, everything is blue. It's not gray, it's blue.
It's not gray, it's blue. Yeah, well, it's blue. That's our new slogan. It's blue. Well, that was interesting to me what you said about Munchkin Land. It kind of mirrors Kansas in the fact that they're farmers.
Yes.
That there are crops, there are vegetables, but exactly what you said, it's not gray. There's this abundance of blue, obviously being very different from gray. Just, and I wonder if that also is, we've talked a little bit about perhaps reading into Baum's intentions to pose a better country, a better version of America.
Maybe that's what Baum hoped the heartland of America would be for him when he went out to like South Dakota.
Right.
Ah, that's interesting. Yeah, the blue, and also like to give a little color symbolization, blue we see often in our depths of our waters being blue and the sky being blue. So there's this kind of calming stability in the color blue, or serenity that can accompany that color. And that's interesting too, to see this like very opposite from gray color. Like blue is full of life and peace and opportunity and feeling excited by that. So that's an interesting thought process to start going through Dorothy's head as she's beginning this journey.
Right.
I also am curious if the Munchkins are vegetarians.
Right.
At the feast, they don't mention any meat.
Hmm.
And then it's all vegetable farms that she's seeing. So I'm curious to, like, what they eat. And I'm like, well, are they also, like, ahead of us in, like, eating better? Because here we have a lot of issues with like I think it's mostly resources and information and big businesses getting in the way of actually telling us what we should be eating. And it looks like they have a more natural relationship with the land, which like speaks to my soul. There is this like a dream, a little secret dream inside of me that is like, let me just give up my entire life in the city. Grab you and Patrick.
I'm coming.
And just go move to a farm and like learn how to cultivate and take care of land and to listen to the environment, look up to the cosmos for help, like have a more intimate relationship with Mother Nature, because so much of that gets lost in our life here. Like I think about like when I'm in a bit more of a busier structure, I have HelloFresh sometimes coming to the door. I have meal boxes. I don't know where this food's coming from.
Right.
I don't know where it's sourced from.
Yeah.
So there's something so beautiful about just seeing like, here's the food that these people are going to eat. And maybe this is also the economy of Oz is like rooted in Munchkin Land. Like this is where the food comes from, which also made me think about the South and our country and also like with slavery, slaves building our country, building our economy. Now the Munchkins have had that similar representation of being enslaved people. Now they're free and they have this land. It's like, wow, what are they now going to do with it? So many questions there, but.
Wow. I honestly, our discussions and learning that this novel was really considered one of the first American, you know, pieces of children's literature. It's making me read it in a whole new light of seeing these parallels to America, not just in the 1800s, but to today, to perhaps the idea of, yeah, celebrating these munchkins who were oppressed, as mm-hmm. as it says, they were enslaved, that we, you know, they are the ones who we're celebrating here in this chapter and meeting. And it's just interesting. I never as a kid or even other times reading this made those connections.
No, I don't think I've ever connected this to what I'm seeing in my life or world. And that's why I'm so happy we're doing this.
Yeah. I'm touching her knee.
Feels great. Okay, we got to get to the Munchkin Rager.
Yes!
Munchkin Rager. Oons, oons, oons. Okay, so Dorothy's been traveling all day. She's mm-hmm. starting to get tired. And it's also amazing, like, as soon as she starts to be like, okay, now I need to, like, figure something out, mm-hmm. something usually presents itself to her. She right. stumbles upon this party
yeah.
that's happening. They are very specific, and there's five fiddlers. And there's a bunch of munchkins of the neighborhood of this rich munchkin, which I am curious about. Yeah. Like Bach. His name is Bach.
Yep.
Okay, tell me like what jumped out at you in this or what made you go, hmm.
Well, I'm very intrigued even by the character of Bach, who this is. Obviously, diving a little deeper, he is brought up in Gregory Maguire's novel, Wicked, The Life and Times of the Wicked Witch of the West. He comes back later in Dorothy of Oz, written by Roger S. Baum, Baum's great-grandson. He's in the musical Wicked, which, spoiler alert, if you skip ahead if you don't want to hear this, he is... he turns out to be the tin man. So there's a whole backstory there. He gets a lot more screen time in future renditions, future interpretations. But I wonder, like, why is he so rich? What did he do? What's going on? Is he the host of this party? Is he, like, the party animal of Munchkinland?
Like, yeah, like, who? He's very Fezziwig-ish. If yeah. we, like, look at, like, Christmas Carol, which I wonder, yeah. like... if that was maybe an inspiration for Baum. Like, he has that, like, jolly,
yeah.
warm... But I love what you said. He totally is, like, an extra in this book, and he, like, goes to guest star. Like,
yeah.
he, like... They love his work, and he gets more features
he
later.
He booked it.
Yeah, like, he proves himself in this one chapter. Good job, Bach.
Yeah.
I'm like, how did he have money? Was yeah. he... Like, what? So what does that mean with his relationship with... here's where I'm at.
Yeah.
The idea of Oz is that it's classless, but there yeah. still is classes. There's yeah. still money in yeah. some way. Or what makes someone rich in Oz? Maybe that's Ooh. What we should be asking. Like, what makes him rich? Maybe his farm is the most prosperous. Maybe he has the most acres.
You're right.
I don't think it's money. I think Ugh. Our definition of rich is not right
in Oz. My American capitalism is showing.
I mean, it's true. Like, because, wait, they don't have money, right? And, like...
Right. Because all it says is she was waited upon by the rich munchkin himself. But you're right. He could be rich in friends. Life. Rich yes. in crops. Oh, you're right.
I would like to believe that Bach is the richest because he has the most giving, loving, compassionate heart. Because, look, right. he opened his doors to everybody in the community. Mm-hmm. They're all coming over for this fiddle party. Which wow. right now, like, seeing those images of, I have a bunch of them pulled up right now from our different collections of books, like, of all the fiddles.
Yeah.
The party, it's making me think of all the honorings of Elijah McClain's life that's happening right now across mm-hmm. the country. Elijah McClain was murdered by police in 2019. His story has really gotten uplifted as everyone is seeking justice for this young man who should be here today. And mm-hmm. he was a violinist, and a lot of string instrument players are, like, taking to the street
wow.
and sharing music in honoring of his life. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful. So that's what I instantly think of now when I see string instruments is Elijah McClain. Mm. And then I'm reminded, like, you should probably go call your reps or get back involved in his wow. story. It's interesting. Like, when things speak to you at certain times, right?
Right.
I obviously didn't see that imagery when I was a kid looking at this because that right. had yet to happen. But
yeah,
that's also like, we're not really seeing a lot of live music right now because mm-hmm. people can't be together. But that's like the, and that's where we've been seeing music is in these like protests and celebrations.
Yeah. That is interesting of, yeah, music to honor someone's life or to protest or, I mean, in this instance, they're celebrating their freedom yes. from bondage. Yes. I mean, it is interesting.
Also didn't mention, I feel like it needs to be mentioned, Elijah McClain was a black man, and mm-hmm. that's important to state.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, I know you definitely noticed this.
Ah.
The white and blue box little comment of like, why don't you read it? Do you have it?
Yes. So this has definitely been catching my eye. So, yeah, Box sees her silver shoes. He says, you must be a great sorceress. She says, why? Why is everyone calling me a sorceress? What did I do?
Take it in.
He says, because you wear silver shoes and have killed the Wicked Witch. Besides, you have white in your frock, and only witches and sorceresses wear white. Also, then she says, my dress is blue and white checked.
Represent, Dorothy.
She's like, what are you talking about? So, interesting. And we've been discussing witches and the portrayals of witches. I've personally been reading this incredible book called Waking the Witch, Reflections on Women, Magic, and Power by Pam Grossman. She goes into the history of witches. The first chapter has many pages on Oz and Margaret Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Lots to learn there. And in the book, Pam Grossman actually says, in witchcraft circles, there are other classifications beyond good and bad. Some speak of white witches, or witches who pledge to do no harm, and black witches, or those who will resort to hexes, though this language is quickly falling out of favor due to its racist undertones.
Yes.
Which, duh, of course, like now,
yeah, why
of
is
course,
white good and yeah. why is black bad? It's just the yeah. continuance of that, like, association that we do.
Right. And I yeah. read in the notes, Jack Zipes also says that Baum was playing with this idea of witches at the time. Like, they always wore black, or they were associated with that color. And he was switching it up, like, playing with the color. So I guess that's a more positive outlook of he just was. But then it's like, but why? Oh, God. Yeah.
I know. Well, also, like, Bach describes her as being a friendly witch because, mm-hmm. like, I can approach you, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's approachable because she's in white and blue, representing right. the Munchkins and representing white magic.
Right.
Which, yeah, like, it's just like, oh, there's that, like, the assumption is that you're good right away. And, like, how much we assume or how much we stereotype and let those things be what lead a connection is very obvious in this little interaction.
Yeah.
But it has made me think, like, why do we do white magic being the light mm-hmm. magic and black magic being dark and evil? Like,
right.
why does it have to go to evil? Because I was like, isn't dark magic, like, what we actually need more of? Because don't we need to be illuminating the light in mm-hmm. the darker times? Like, yeah. isn't that more necessary mm-hmm. than white magic?
Right.
I don't know. But
I
it's
know
just
either.
Really curious to see how these, how the colors show up in magic and skin color and
right.
how we associate things. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
In witchcraft.
Yeah. Wow.
Just to give us another little something with this little interaction
mm-hmm.
is like, yes, what you said about the sorceress, she keeps being called a sorceress. It made me think of, like, when I walk out of a stage door and someone, like, recognizes you, but for the wrong role, and they start, like, be like, oh my God, you're amazing. This happened to me for you.
This happened on Sister
For Act. You all the time, which yep. is hilarious. Em and I don't look alike. I think we just had, I had bangs at the time that was very similar to your characters.
Yeah, my character wore bangs.
So this is actually hilarious. I did not think about that. It happened for you
yeah.
quite often where
yeah.
I, you know what I started doing? I started accepting the compliments.
Yes.
I was like, thank you so much. Like, I just stopped saying, that's not me.
Right.
Because it happens so often.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about Dorothy in that moment and being like, you know what? Let me just, like, sure. I'm a sorceress.
That's true. I'm just going to own this identity. Right? And how funny, how you know, fortuitous that her dress is blue, the color of Munchkinland, mm-hmm. and white, apparently the color of a friendly witch. I mean, there's a lot of things working in her favor here.
Definitely. she's got some like privilege in a way, like unearned privilege. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of blessing her or fortune. I think that's an interesting thing. One is privilege, one is fortune. I think there's like a nice little bag of goods for her in this moment. Mm. Also, for the next morning, I think she asks Bok, like, how far is Emerald City? Because she really doesn't know, like, how long she's going to be doing this trip. She's kind of got that glow of, like, I'm off. Yeah. But, you know, like, she's not worn yet.
I'm wearing high heels.
Right. I'm in high heels. Great. Like, her feet don't hurt yet. She's good.
Right.
He's like, I don't know. He just answers with that. And
he's never been.
No. Like, there's this very, like, it makes me think of people who don't, like, leave their home state and how, like, I think that's... Okay, this is Tara's opinion. Like, I don't think that's helpful. Mm. It just really limits your view of, like, how things have to be done, right? It makes me think of that kind of small-minded nature. Because he basically is like, you should stay here. Like, that's the energy I'm getting from him. It's like, we've got it made here. Like, we're now liberated. Mm-hmm. We have all this amazing food. Stay here. And she's like... No, I gotta go. Like, I know, like, he even warns her of, like, it's gonna be not... There's gonna be dangerous moments on this path.
Yeah.
But she's like, no, I gotta do this. Like, I gotta get home. Like, the wizard is at the end of this.
Yeah.
It's so interesting.
That also makes me think of... Yeah, my kind of interpretation of this was... the Wizard of Oz has power. He is, like, the greatest, quotation mark. And yet... Bok has never even ventured close to, not even geographically, but, like, does he even understand anything that the ruler of this land stands for or believes in?
Well, when's the last time you've been to the White House?
Years and years and years ago. Yeah.
That's like us going to the White House, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
Which I don't need to visit at this moment. I'm good.
Yeah. But it's also in a, maybe in a deeper way, maybe I'm reading too much into it, of... moments in my life where I just accepted power or accepted someone who was elected and was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, it's scary and dangerous and I don't understand it, so I'm just not gonna venture. You should just hang out here.
We've got
to meet. So I love that Dorothy's like, she knows it's dangerous, but she also knows it's kind of her only choice.
Yeah.
So she's not turning back. She's going to keep going. Pretty cool.
She's got one key in her pocket. Amazing.
The key is still there.
Also, just got a shout out to Toto. We love our Toto, like the baby and Toto, like like staring at each other.
The Munchkin baby.
The Munchkin baby is so fascinated with Toto. They've never seen dogs before. Yeah, the Munchkins, which is a really interesting observation that Baum makes in his writing. Yeah. Also, like, I wonder if Toto's ever seen a baby before. So you have these two creatures, like,
it's so cute.
Like curiosity heightens. That's like a cute little thing that's happening while this conversation's going on. But then Dorothy leaves.
Dorothy leaves. She bade her friends goodbye.
And here we go. This is like, we're going to meet our first friend.
I'm so excited.
Okay. So the ragtag band is about to be created. What is like something you noticed immediately in the Scarecrow meeting? Here he comes.
Here he comes. So I have to share, I think the Scarecrow is my favorite character. I think I just feel such a love for him. I just adore him. I think he's so cute and fun, and his humility, his goofiness, when he's actually secretly wise. He actually does have brains. Like, I just love, I love everything about his journey. But how interesting that, you know, Dorothy, she gets tired, she's leaning on a fence, sitting on a fence, and she's just kind of looking around. She notices a scarecrow, and then he winks at her, and she's just like, wait, what?
Also, the wink. Let's talk about that for
a second. Yeah, what's up with that, Scarecrow?
The wink. A wink usually represents shared hidden knowledge.
Look at you.
But it could also be flirtatious, which
that
I think is, you know, I think we could let that go for this moment.
Yeah.
I don't think There's some questionable behaviors of the Scarecrow, and I think that's why Toto doesn't take him in right away.
Yeah, Toto does not.
Toto's, like, barking at him, not really sure if this is a guy to be trusted. It's also, like, a man going on a journey with a little girl. Yes, it's a Scarecrow. He's not fully human.
Right.
But it's a masculine energy, and I think Toto has a protective, shieldy energy around Dorothy.
Yes.
But, yeah, that wink is so interesting, like, the shared hidden knowledge. Yeah.
Like,
I'm alive, and you get to see, like, I don't show this to everybody.
Right. And that was my question is, are there other scarecrows in Munchkin Land who come to life? Was the scarecrow alive this whole time? I think, I don't know if it's explicitly mentioned. You'll have to correct me. He was made 2 days ago.
That's going to come up in our next chapter.
I think that comes up soon. So has he just been conscious this whole time, waiting for someone to come along? Has he spoken to other people? Did he know Dorothy was coming? What's
How
his place?
How many times has he been rejected, maybe by a passerby?
Yeah.
Because, you know, what's so interesting? Funny. In some of the pictures that I'm looking at from our illustrated copies, most of the ones with him up on his pole, he's sad. Like, he's in a frown. His painted lips are frowning. Mm-hmm. Also, the, like, crucifix imagery just immediately comes.
Right.
Of, like, the shaming that a pole, being propped up on a pole does, like the public shaming.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's, that is in my, even as a kid, I remember feeling like, get him off of there.
Get him off the
pole. I don't want him up there. That's an unsafe place to be.
Yeah.
Just how sad he is in all those pictures.
Yeah.
Just hurts my heart. But then usually the pictures following when he's down, the smile goes right. Into the smile's present.
Right. Well, it's interesting. The title of the chapter is Dorothy Saves the Scarecrow.
Yeah.
She helps him get down. She liberates him. I guess there's this theme of liberation going through the novel.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of the, as well, I mean, she's in a cornfield. She sees a scarecrow. This could very well be Kansas.
It's so right? similar. Well, I actually would love to bring that up. Like, Scarecrow and Dorothy, I mean, he's all in blue, right? Like, he has a Munchkin uniform on. And some of these depictions, we even see, like, red shoes on him, which I think is, like, so there you go, America. So they're both, like, this Americana in fairyland.
Yeah.
Like, they're in a fairyland, but they still have this patriotic sense, this home sense. So, yes, I agree with you that. And they also are both described to be in faded clothes.
Right.
So there's a sensibility that they can even connect on this, like, country sensibility to it, which they could both connect on.
Yeah.
I just love the imagery I got when she stops to notice the scarecrow.
Yeah.
I used to, as a little girl, climb my fence all the time in my backyard, like, just get on it and just climb it. And I just was thinking about how much I used to do that. And, like, it didn't really bring me joy. It just was a way to pass time or a way to, like, explore something and also, like, see what my body could do doing something a little bit unusual.
Yeah.
So there's something really sweet about her also just kind of, like, playing on this fence for a moment.
Yeah.
That I wonder also is something that she may have done on the farm. Like, that would be her, like, I don't know what to do right now, so I'm gonna go climb a fence.
Such a thing little kids do, you're right. Yeah, and also even, you know, I like to get nerdy, so there's also a great website that I'll share the history of scarecrows.
Yes!
So, obviously we know, you know, scarecrow, you're supposed to be scaring off the crows. You have a very specific purpose to just be there to protect the crops.
Yes.
We know that the scarecrow, we associate it with rural lifestyles. And scarecrows go all the way back to the Egyptians. They first used scarecrows in recorded history to protect wheat fields along the Nile River from quail. And then when scarecrows began to pop up and be used in the United States, first by immigrant German farmers, they made human-looking scarecrows called Butzemann, which later changed to Boogeyman.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So the evolution of the scarecrow became like a child fantasy monster.
Yeah, he's a monster. So
wow.
There's just a lot of like maybe shame associated with the scarecrow.
The scarecrow is bottom of the barrel a little bit. Also, we never get that he's named Scarecrow. We're just assuming that's his name because that's what he does.
Right.
So his name is all wrapped up in his identity.
Yeah.
Of like a job he didn't ask for. Right?
Yeah.
Like, he was built to do this. Which is so interesting. I wonder what the process of the Munchkins, or anyone, Americans too, when they make a scarecrow, what that process is like. Does it feel like a creative project, or does it feel like a nuisance of a thing to have to do?
Right.
I mean, obviously, scarecrows, really, we don't see them as much anymore besides decoration. Fall time, they're typical. People put scarecrows out on their front yard.
Yeah,
they're definitely more like celebratory of fall now.
Yes.
Or in Halloween costumes, a lot of people dress up as specifically for the scarecrow from The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
But we don't really see like the use anymore because we've outgrown having to need a scarecrow. Now, he's also not good at his job, apparently, because
the crows are hanging out.
We see the crows hanging out as well. And maybe that also is like, he's realizing he's not meant to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not meant to scare crows.
I know. Oh. Yeah, there's actually a number in the musical, the stage version, where the crows are kind of picking on him and like, "You're not scary." And he's like, "Oh." And I love that about him.
Oh, so interesting too. Like the scarecrow specifically in the original musical, the 1902 one, which I can't wait to explore more.
Yes.
Fred Stone, who originally played the scarecrow, was like made famous because of like the embodiment. Like, of how to make his body look floppy. And, that's such a fun thing for an actor to get to portray. Yes! Is that him down there?
I've got some photos here. Yes. Yeah, there he is. Like, a cool drawing.
Yes.
We'll post these.
Also, like, original Bob Fosse movement.
Yes!
It's so cool. So, it must have been a treat for an actor to play. The Scarecrow must be a really fun role for any actor to play.
Oh, yeah. And that actually is, like, a fun little fact that Ray Bolger actually went and saw Fred Stone.
Yeah.
When Ray Bolger was 16, he saw Fred Stone perform in a matinee production of the classic Jack-O-Lantern. Don't know what that is. At a Boston theater in 1920. And Ray Bolger has been quoted as saying, "I've never forgotten it. He bounded on a trampoline out of a haystack looking just like a scarecrow." And so Ray Bolger was actually really influenced by Fred Stone and wanted to play the Scarecrow. Ray Bolger ended up playing the Scarecrow in the MGM 1939 film. So I just love that connection too.
Yes.
It's really fun.
Yes. I also love that his voice is described for the first time speaking as being husky, which like is so sweet with like the corn husks being everywhere. Like I love that detail.
Yeah.
Any actors out there are going to play the Scarecrow at some point.
Husky.
Take that. Husky. Take that original context. That is gold for you. I always look for things like that. Like little details that just could be like, oh, this can inform everything about this character. I have to point out the word queer comes up two more times.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up in While Dorothy Was Looking Earnestly Into the Queer Painted Face of the Scarecrow, comes up there.
Mm-hmm.
And it also comes up with Dorothy being puzzled by the Scarecrow after she lets him down. In what he declares when he says, "I feel like a new man," she says that sounded queer to hear for a stuffed man to speak about that. I just think it's so, that word's presence just makes me so happy. That's like, I should do like queer like checks.
Yeah, count them.
In each chapter. But also, like, here's what I love about the Scarecrow. I love that he doesn't assume. Like, he just asks. Like, he asks her where the Emerald City is.
Mm-hmm.
But she's like, "Bro, where you been?" And she even, like, has a moment of, like, "Don't you know?" Like,
right.
And he's like, no. Like, he's not, like, he's not ashamed. He just, he asks over, assumes. Like, so there, I immediately had this blissfully ignorant picture in my head, like hearing that of sometimes it's so great to be blissfully ignorant.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
for sure.
And sometimes it's like, where have you been?
Yeah.
Right? And I thought about, I had a discussion with a friend recently and we were talking about like informing relatives about everything that's going on right now. In terms of the Black Lives Matter movement, what people are fighting for, and us going to relatives and certain relatives, like, not knowing, like, them being like, "Well, who's Breonna Taylor?"
Mm-hmm.
It's like, where have you been?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just want to be like, where have you been? Have you turned on any news?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is everywhere, and we need you. Help. Come help.
Yeah.
So it's so, that, like, balance is so interesting. There's ways where I think it sometimes feels so good not to know something, right? Like, right. And then there's like Dorothy's response of being like, where have you been? That's not what she says. She just says like, don't you know? Why don't you know?
Yeah.
She says, why don't you know? She returned in surprise.
Right.
So interesting.
I like what you're saying. Yeah. Cause then on the other side of things, there is, he has this naivete, this kind of blissful hope of, oh, well, if you're going to the wizard and he's going to help you, he'll totally help me. So yes. there is that.
Which is beautiful. That right. like faith part of it is so beautiful.
Context. Context.
Yeah, he's definitely the archetype of the divine fool, where he is rich in wisdom and common sense, which is amazing, and also there to provide like some comedy. But I did notice, like, usually the divine fool doesn't care about what other people think, but he says, like, I don't want other people to call me a fool. That's like why I want to go get some brains. So he does have some pride, which is interesting. And I wonder if pride is an ego thing, which makes me think, oh, there's probably a brain in his head already. He just doesn't know it.
Right.
You know? And I also love what she offers to him of, you won't be any worse off.
I know. Very optimistic.
Yeah. Like, and I think that's great advice of like, you won't be any worse off than you are now. So why don't you just come with me? Like, it's only going to make your life better, if not anything at all.
That line specifically makes me think of L. Frank Baum. And kind of his life and how he always was moving around and searching for the next best thing. And that just feels like something he would... I just finished reading Finding Dorothy by Elizabeth Letts, and it's all about L. Frank Baum and his wife Maud Baum's relationship. And that just feels like something he would say to her. Like, we're not going to be any worse off. We may as well.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Might as well try.
Yeah.
I love that attitude.
Yeah.
I also love that he shares the burden with her. Like, he's like, I'll carry your basket.
Yeah.
And I won't get tired. So he's already offering, like, companionship in a way that is a shared effort in this journey, where they're using their skills to get through this.
Yeah.
Which is so great. Like, Dorothy definitely, I'm finding now, and she's so polite with him, too.
She's so
the whole
sweet.
Time.
So sweet.
Is, like, she's the glue. Mm-hmm. I think to what we're going to get, this ragtag band coming together, she's the glue to all of them, because she's sweet and sees them all for what they are.
Yeah.
And then they have these skills that get to shine because they feel safe with her, which I think is so great.
I love that.
Is there anything else you notice with the Scarecrow?
Two things. Number one, fun fact, since I did just read Finding Dorothy, there's a little interchange, there's a little exchange between L. Frank Baum and Maud before they are married, where she's like, I'm not afraid of anything. And he says, you're not afraid of anything? And she says, well, I am afraid of scarecrows. My neighbors growing up had a scarecrow in their yard, and I used to see it from afar, and I was really scared. And I just think that's funny. Who knows if that's, 100% true, but it's just like a cute little detail.
Yeah, and like, again, it goes back to like scarecrows getting a bad rap.
Yeah.
Of just like being scary when like we're getting, that's actually interesting. Like, the scarecrow is very sweet. So we're getting to see maybe something we might fear.
Right.
Be very relatable.
Yeah, and fun, and has no brains and is silly and, no brains quotation, because I think he does.
Definitely.
And then the last thing that really stuck out to me from Jack Sipes' notes, which I'm sure I'll be quoting throughout everything because I love them. He says, Dorothy collects specific qualities, brains, heart, and courage that she will need to mature and return home on her own footing. Symbolically, the Scarecrow, Tin Woodman, and Lion represent the inner characteristics that Dorothy must develop. And at the same time, these figures need to cultivate what they have but do not recognize.
Right.
Ooh.
Right.
How cool is that? Because the
so
Scarecrow...
So much is self-recognition. Yeah. So much. Like, but I do think that's why we have other human beings, is because it's really hard to recognize some things within ourselves. We need someone else's eyes on us.
Yeah. Was there anything else that stood out to you about the Scarecrow?
I think... our favorite moment at the end.
Yes. How great is that?
Our, like, the mic drop. It feels like an episode just ended, and, like, it should cut to music, and then we're, seeing the Netflix, like, the next episode will start in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
The last thing that happens in this whole
chapter. Should we act this out?
Yeah. Do you want to be... let's go from Don't Mind Toto.
Okay. Am I Dorothy?
Yeah.
Great. Don't mind Toto, said Dorothy to her new friend. He never bites.
Oh, I'm not afraid, replied the Scarecrow. He can't hurt the straw. Do let me carry that basket for you. I shall not mind it, for I can't get tired. I'll tell you a secret, he continued as he walked along. There is only one thing in the world I am afraid of.
What is that? Asked Dorothy. The munchkin farmer who made you?
No, answered the Scarecrow. It's a lighted match.
Ba-dum-bum.
And then it never gets mentioned again.
Yeah,
like, it's fire. Like, oh my God, there's going to be a threat of fire in this whole entire book. Nope.
Never
it
again.
Only comes up in the movie with the witch, which I think was ingenious of the movie to make more of a storyline based off of like a real fear he might have.
Yeah.
It's like being lit up because that will be the end of him. But nothing else. I think that is such a great ending.
I love that moment. It also shows like he's funny. He's witty. He can make a joke. I mean, he probably didn't even know he's making a joke, because that is a joke. That would be a laugh on stage, you know?
Totally.
So I just love that kind of bit of wittiness at the end. It's really cute.
Also noticing, like, Dorothy being, like, the munchkin, your owner.
Right.
Like, the munchkin farmer, which is so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, fearing your owner.
Yeah.
Interesting. That's, like, what she instantly goes to.
Right.
We have a ton of illustrations that are lying in front of us. We actually made a journey in illustrations going from different books, going from like Dorothy stepping onto the Elbrick Road to the Munchkin Jamboree to finding the Scarecrow. And I want to give a shout out to the illustration from Michael Haig. It is a two-pager. I love the two-pagers, the full spread. And it makes me think of my wedding because it has the twinkle lights up above. Oh, this is a quick story. I, at my wedding, the twinkle lights, I got married in a barn, and the twinkle lights and like tapestry were an extra add-on that my husband and I couldn't afford, but we wanted it so badly, but we let it go. We like let it be. We're like, it's just too much extra, but it like made the barn so beautiful. So like, I was so sad about it. But our beautiful event planner there, Madison, who's the best. Madison, I'm going to send this episode to you because I love you. Still Madison, I love you. She was like, let me see what I could do. Like, just gave us that energy all the time. Like, if there's a wedding before you that weekend, we'll keep the twinkle lights up.
Yes.
And I mean, we walked up for our rehearsal dinner. I had kind of forgotten about it, let it go at that point. And the twinkle lights were all up and the tapestry was all up. And she was like, this is no worries. Like, this is a gift from us to you guys. I started sobbing. So that's what I think of when I see these beautiful like light bulb twinkle lights and like all the like women taking their hats off. Kicking up their feet, like, it looks like they're just picking up random instruments. Toto's getting passed, like, around. Like, I love it. It just seems like it's becoming, like, a bit of, like, a loose, fun time.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's, like, little, what's in that little cup right there?
Yeah, it's never explicitly mentioned, but
bet there's some spiked something in there. I also want to say to anyone who wants to illustrate Oz moving into the future. This is just an ask from someone who loves collecting these books.
Mm-hmm.
Please, for the love of God, please make your Munchkin land diverse. It is all white people in every book I have.
Yeah.
Please bring more color to Munchkin land. Please. Love, Tara.
And MK. XOXO.
XOXO. Okay. For an ending for this episode.
Yes.
Em and I were just realizing we've been talking a lot about like recognizing the powers within and like allowing them to come out so they could feel liberated and seen. And we wanted to take a moment to recognize a quality in each of us. Me recognizing something in Em and Em recognizing something in me. So I'll start. So Em, what I recognize is always in you is almost like a fairy music that comes out of you that just lightens an environment. Like, an environment is not going to go sour if you are present.
Mm.
You bring such joy and lightness and laughter instantly into a space, which can liberate other people from feeling like scared or shy or whatever. It's definitely like a contagious feeling.
Thanks, Tara.
You're welcome.
Oh, my gosh. Good thing we have this recorded. I can listen every day. Thank you, Tara.
You're welcome.
So I recognize in you, you've been thinking of pursuing perhaps the field of therapy, mm-hmm. even as like another career or a side interest. And I just recognize in you that you already are, in a way, an emotional therapist for so many. You are constantly on the lookout for others who need to be lifted up and celebrated, whether that's a friend or a family member or a person experiencing injustice, and that people already do, you know, go to you for that encouragement and that wisdom. And so while it's simultaneously something that you're reaching towards, it's already within you. You already do it.
We're going to end every episode with wet eyes.
I know.
Thank you so much, Em.
Of course.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed listening to us meet the Scarecrow,
yes.
Go to a Munchkin Jamboree, enjoy our first steps down this yellow brick road journey. You can come follow along with our visuals on our Instagram at Down the Yellow Brick Pod. We also want to give a shout out to Kimberly Wilpon.
Kimberly!
She is a knitter and amazing. She made us these little yellow brick headwear. You yeah. have a beanie. I have this sweet little, what is this? Like a headband.
Like a little headband, yeah.
Yeah, I have a nice little headband
she
on.
She knit them.
We feel like it maybe also blessed us with clarity.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, that's up, we'll I guess, see. Up for you to decide.
We'll see if you agree.
We'll see you on our next journey into chapter 4. Take care.
See you then.